All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
Hello. So what are the odd things that we have to get into?
So we went to take our daughter for her 12th birthday to a restaurant that has fondue. It was her first time with like a fondue experience. And as we're speaking at the table about like fondue experiences and chocolate fountains and all these things, the conversation turned to something that I had never heard of. And I'd like to know if you've ever seen or heard of this. Gravy fountain.
What? Ew. That sounds so disgusting.
Right. So I'd like to say that the concept does not sound altogether bad to me. I can imagine walking up with like a plate of, let's say, some potatoes and dipping it in a gravy fountain. And I'd be plenty happy with that. That sounds like some disco fries. I don't know. That doesn't sound awful to me. I'm all about like savory things. I'm not a huge chocolate and sweets person. So I get sick of those chocolate fountains real quick.
Right.
Especially if they don't serve it with fruit, like when they only put it out with the little brownies or cookies or marshmallows.
With like dry angel food cake.
Yes. I'm like sweets on sweets. I get a stomachache in 2 minutes.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't mind fondue with cheese is nice. And then the gravy fountain, I was like, I mean, okay, maybe that could work. However, is that really a thing? I've never seen one.
Is it real?
I don't know. To be fair, got home really late last night, have been really busy today, so I have not Googled it.
That's a good Google. It kind of reminds me of, it's like a different idea, but there's a place in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I think it's called Rock and Roll Sushi. And everyone sits at a booth and there's like a conveyor belt that just delivers food and you grab whatever you want. I think when you go in there, you just pay a standard fee.
Yes.
And then just food just drives right by you and you can grab what you want.
We actually have one of those right here in Jersey, actually in Teaneck, New Jersey. That's where I went to nursing school at that hospital that's there at Holy Name Hospital. And they have one of those conveyor sushi restaurants. And it's kind of like you go in, you pay, let's say, like a $40 flat fee for like an all-you-can-eat, kind of like an all-you-can-eat buffet. And you sit down in front of the giant conveyor belt. And whatever comes along, you grab it, you eat it. And it's an experience.
It is. But it also skeeves me out a little bit. I don't know why. Other people's hands grabbing food. Ever since COVID, I'm super sketchy about everything.
Yes. Well, so, I mean, COVID changed all of that. I mean, we've talked about how it changed us going into the ice bars and putting on random robes. It most certainly changes how I've walked up to salad bars and any kind of shared food space. You know,
oh my like gosh,
that sushi, that sushi's rotating around while everyone's breathing on it. So, I mean, I would think twice even about any kind of fountain at this point. This was a private table. Like it was just us at our party having the little chocolate in front of us.
Yeah.
So I would be very wary of a party fountain of any kind at this point.
Oh my gosh. Exactly. No party fountains.
However, if there's any listeners that have seen, witnessed in real life a gravy fountain, please send us a message, Instagram, the To Death Do Us Part podcast. Just come on, send us a message. Tell us about your gravy fountain experience.
Yeah, tag us.
Please.
Or like a cheese. I know you're not big on soft cheese, but if it was like a cheese river fountain, I don't know. I think I would like that better than a chocolate one too.
See, so we were talking about this. I had a little bit of a skepticism because I was saying, you know, when it's in a fondue pot, the reason cheese can go into a fondue pot is because it's very thick and it really can't go into a fountain because you would have to thin out the cheese a lot, and it probably wouldn't taste as good. It would be like very watery cheese,
like watery queso. No, yeah. That's no bueno.
And that's why I was like, I don't know if the gravy would work, because you'd have to thin out the gravy a lot to pour it through.
Yeah, no lumps.
Yeah. But maybe they've come up with a recipe. It's more like an au jus.
Au jus? You know? I would love to know. I would try anything once as long as I knew it was, if I could know the kitchen it came from, like was a clean kitchen.
If it came to the private table, you know, you're with a partner, eight, and they bring me the small fountain, it's just us. I know everybody there. I know we're not going to be double dipping in or anything weird. Then I would try it, sure. I've tried weirder things than that.
Right? So other than, I'm trying to think of what's been new that's been going on, but we're supposed to be getting weather. There's like no snow here at all. It hasn't even been that cold, but we're supposed to get, I don't know, a few inches of snow, but they're saying it's going to be really bad. And so I got a text message saying that I need to have like at least Monday through Thursday groceries on hand. And I was kind of thinking, I'm like, I've got a lot of pasta, but I can't handle a pasta anymore. Like, it just feels so heavy in my stomach. And so I was like, well, it might be, I don't know. I have no idea how to stockpile and buy for Christmas and do regular grocery shopping, because I don't have a full kitchen, or it's not my type of full kitchen. I guess I should stay. Mm. So I'm trying to figure out what to do. Do I really want to go bulk, like go to Costco, or should I don't know.
How much storage room do you have? Like, how big is the fridge?
I mean, I have a fridge and a full oven, like sink and dishwasher and everything, but the cabinet space is limited. And I don't like a lot of stuff on the counter. It stresses me out.
Yeah, sure, sure. I mean, this is a special circumstance, though, if you get snowed in.
That's true. And I think they're saying that we're getting snowed in. So I might just have to bite the bullet and go to Costco and get some. Some good snowed-in goodies.
Yeah, and I think just for emergency purposes, you should always have, you know, cans of soup, bags of rice, just in case, like, things start getting thin and you need to eat and you don't want to just keep eating, you know, boxes of pasta. You know, it's not like the food you'd normally eat. I know they're full of sodium and stuff, but, like, if things start getting, you know, like the roads still aren't clear and you know you're not going to get any deliveries or to the supermarket, you know, stuff that can go a long way, oatmeal, that doesn't go bad. That's, you know what I mean?
That's a good suggestion, actually, oatmeal.
Oatmeal, or farina, grits or something. Yeah, grits, farina, any of those like dried grains, the rices, the pastas, the farina, oatmeal, grits, all of those, even like couscous or anything, quinoa, because you can make those into lots of different, like quinoa in a salad, you could with fruit, you can use it cold, you can make it hot. You could do so many things with grits too. Like it doesn't have to be all savory, and you can even bake stuff with grits. You can make like grits into biscuits. So
yeah,
those, I feel that's like those a good idea. You can, you know, it's good, like boxes of pancake or waffle mix.
Ooh, yeah, like protein cakes.
Yeah.
Those are really good. And you can make those into muffins if you want to.
Yeah, and because it's a powder, it's not going to go bad, and the boxes won't take up too much space because it's so thick and condensed. You know, they're heavy boxes, but they're thin. So those are good foods to, like, keep without taking up loads of space, you know, piling up meat in your freezer or piling up like boxes and bags of chips and stuff. You know what I mean?
I like it. I am actually going to use some of those ideas when I go to the store. I think I'm going to go tomorrow. But I like that oatmeal, pancakes, probably like muffins or something too. I just, ever since I moved out, when I lived in New Jersey, like, we would have to think of things like hurricane season and stuff like that. But ever since moving away from there, I just, and after COVID and actually cleaning out my garage with the stockpiling, I'm just like, I don't want to go through that again where I have shelves of like pickles and salad dressing and like just weird crap. Yep. It like gives me PTSD a little bit where I'm like, are we going back to the old ways of like,
well, let me be clear. Even before COVID and whether or not I lived in New Jersey, I have always been not like insane, but a sort of like mini prepper.
Yeah.
And that is because I am almost certain that the way we mess around with genetics is exactly how we're going to trigger the zombie apocalypse. And I need to be prepared.
Yeah. Did you see in China, or I don't know who was like scientists or archaeologists, they found a full embryo of a dinosaur.
Yeah, it's going to be Jurassic Park. And then we're all going to be eaten.
Yeah,
not a good idea. The woolly mammoth. We told them not to. They're going to do it anyway.
I told you this was a bad idea.
They didn't watch the movies. They didn't listen to Jeff Goldblum. That's the end.
Life.
So, yeah. I'd like to say I'm so smart about prepping for storms. It's not. It's because I'm paranoid. I've watched too many sci-fi movies and I watched The Walking Dead. So that's why I have this food stockpiled like this. Don't get me
are you
started
gonna watch
the dried milk.
Are you going to watch the end of Walking Dead?
No. I'm going to be honest.
I'm not either.
I fell off a while ago. It started getting like crazy in a way that lost my interest. So I stopped watching it a while ago. But at the beginning, I was a hardcore like Walking Dead fan. But
I was too.
Point, I think I was just at that point. I was like, all right, I'm out.
I watched kind of up until or around when Carl like lost his arm and his eye and all that stuff that was going on. I was like, it's never going to end. It just goes back and forth.
Yeah, I'm like, how many pieces of himself is this kid going to lose and still live?
Right. So that's kind of when I quit watching, because I was like, all right, I guess next season they'll just have the same arguments at a different location.
Yes. It felt very like stagnant.
Yeah, it was repetitive too.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, did not have the same feel that it did all those other seasons. So yeah, I sort of dropped out. I would go back and like watch an episode here and there. So Ron really liked it, but it lost my interest.
I hear ya. So do you want to get into today's episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, did you by any chance listen to the interview I did?
I'm going into this blind.
Okay, cool. I like that. So the episode today it's a motorcycle club in Neenah, Wisconsin. And Neenah, Wisconsin is in the Fox Valley of Wisconsin. It's north of Milwaukee, south of Green Bay. I didn't know much about it. I mean, I knew where some of these towns were because I grew up in Chicago. So you kind of grow up going to Wisconsin Dells. But Neenah is like this gem of a place. It has waterfalls, hiking, like a historic downtown. And it looks like a Christmas Lifetime movie downtown, where it's like so quaint and beautiful. And the things that I'm going to be talking about today, I had no idea that were going on. It doesn't look like it would be happening in a place like this, is what I'll say. With the expansion of their downtown and tourism and things like that, I believe is where some of the issues that are coming at the Eagle Nation Motorcycle Club. But let's get into it. In quaint Neenah, Wisconsin, the owner is Steve Arado. And some of the issues that are plaguing Eagle Nation are starting back in 2012. And this place was supposed to be a community where people could work on their bikes, their Harleys. They could have a community center. They would host things like breakfast for firefighters. They did a lot with Toys for Tots and giving throughout the holiday season. So it was supposed to be a part of the community. There was never a time that the owner, Steve, was like, you know, we're a biker gang. We do drugs. We do hard things. No, he wanted to be a part of the community. He wanted to be involved. But for some reason, there just has been a target on this location. And in 2012 is where we'll start, because that's as far as back as what I can find of things that have been happening at this location. So Hoffer is on the police force. He is the author of the search warrant and participated in a drug raid. So what happened, and there is video surveillance of this on YouTube where you can see the cameras from inside. It looks like where they did like shot pool and stuff, and there's an office in the background. There's nobody there. It's like a bright sunny day, but over 30 SWAT team storm the front and back of the building and allegedly plant marijuana in Steve Errato's office. Ira Robbins, an investigative consultant retained by Steve Errato, alleged that the police planted the marijuana without a doubt and they tampered the evidence, he said. And the 2012 raid resulted in 15 felony charges against Steve. One, maintaining a drug trafficking place, 6 counts of being a felon in possession of a firearm, 8 counts of bail jumping, and he was convicted of a misdemeanor possessing marijuana. But all of the charges have since been dismissed. So basically, nothing had been going on, but for some reason, the location has been assumed to be trafficking drugs. And when they went there and raided the place, they didn't find anything. What they found was like a little bag or an eighth of weed. That's all they found. And in the YouTube video, you can see Steve is handcuffed and completely compliant, but they're still like, they're kneeling on his back. They're yelling. They're pulling out guns. It makes no sense just from an outsider looking in, like what could be going on
that's warranting that kind of response.
Exactly.
Like you would think they were busting into a meth lab.
They definitely have been stereotyped as being a part of a gang and not a business. And Stern, who was at a press conference discussing what had happened at the Neenah City Hall, says, hopefully we will never have to deal with this again and something like this will never happen again. Well, 3 years later, fast forward to 2015, Ryan Motterson and Mike Peterson, along with Michael Funk, were held at gunpoint for several hours at the Eagle Nation Cycles Club by a gunman named Brian Flatoff. And I'm just going to stick this in right here because I looked up Brian Flatoff and there's an interview with his girlfriend who said, yes, what Brian did was completely unacceptable, but he fell off the wagon. He was on drugs. He got into an argument with me. He left the house. No one could find him. We were out searching for him. And unfortunately, this is what happened because we couldn't get involved fast enough. So it's not like Brian was like this bad guy, like this mobster, gangster hanging out. No, he was someone who unfortunately was an addict and something happened to him that day because he never did anything like this his entire life. And unfortunately, what happened is Michael Funk answered the door. There was a buzzer at the back door, and sometimes it's common for the shop to get deliveries or people pick up their motorcycles back there. So Michael, he answers the door, and a few seconds later, on the cameras, you can see Michael come through the door backwards. And the shooter, Brian Flatoff, looked at him, looked at Michael's son, and said, "I want you to leave from the back door." A few seconds later, Michael came through the door backwards. I saw the shooter had a gun present. He looked at me, and I looked at my son, and I told him we need to leave out the front door. So they were able to escape, but the door was locked behind them, so no one could get in. When Flatoff took the hostages at gunpoint, it was a dispute over a motorcycle. Michael tried to dispel the situation by saying, "Hey, I'll stop by and talk to you. We can get through this," but he reached for his gun and he said, "You're not going to go anywhere." He said, "I guess you're right," and it was pretty scary. Modderson says that it appeared that Brian Flatoff was not sober, coming in and just making demands that were not very intelligible. Flatoff apparently saw his motorcycle on the lift and wanted everyone to take his bike down. He made us take the bike off the lift and begin to put it to back together at gunpoint so he could load it in his truck personally. I did what I was told, but I ran out of things because you just can't put together a bike in 20 minutes. So while this is going on, the police were called. In Nina Police, there's another video that I talk about with Mike in kind of the recap interview. And the police aren't really doing much. They're sitting in their vehicles. They are kind of talking about a game plan, but they're standing around on the outside of the building while there's people inside the building that are being held at gunpoint. Nothing is happening. And it's insane to see this in real time off the cops' body cameras. I don't know what the process of a situation like this would be, but there's no sense of urgency whatsoever. Wow. So eventually, finally, when the Nina police try to surround the back door because they learn that the back door is open, they were driven off by gunfire from Flatoff. Minutes later, Michael Funk escaped. So when the police learned that the back door was open, Flatoff tells Michael Funk, "Go shut the door, lock it." And so Mike, with his hands up, walks towards the door and sees an opportunity to escape. So he runs throughout the alley to leave. And Brian Flatoff doesn't shoot his gun. The police start shooting and they end up shooting and killing Michael Funk. Then cut to the video. The police, they have a description of the shooter. They know how tall he is, his hair color, what he's wearing that day, that he has a gun. And the person that runs out, Michael, he's a senior citizen. He looks nothing like the description.
Oh my God.
So, unfortunately, yeah. Within 2 minutes of shooting Michael Funk, police learned that they had shot the hostage and not their hostage taker, yet they didn't change their approach or tactics. There's a copy of the lawsuit that was presented to the Post Crescent, which is one of the sources that I'm using. It's like the local newspaper in Appleton, Wisconsin. It says officers pointed guns at the hostages, handcuffed them, and placed them in custody for various periods of time, causing pain, emotional, anxiety, depression, PTSD, and other physical and emotional trauma, justifying an award of compensatory damages. The things that happened were wrong in the way that they were treated as hostages, and if you were taking them into custody for a crime, but they didn't commit a crime. They just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. In the video, it will also show, I keep cutting back to the video because it's amazing to me how there is a police officer who is wearing his headgear, bulletproof vest. He gets shot in the head. It doesn't penetrate the helmet, but he's got, obviously, you know, a huge knob on his forehead. And his chief tells him to stand down. And he does not stand down. He goes back into the action. And what happens then, he is the one that you can see shoots Michael Funk. Afterwards, when the shooting ceases, no one helps Michael. He lays in the alley for over 30 minutes with no assistance, no ambulance, no medics, nothing. And it cuts to Craig, who's the police officer. He is bragging that he shot someone and that he wants to go back in the action. His coworkers, the other police, are like, are you okay? Like, what can I do for you? I'm so sorry that you had to shoot someone. What do you have your body cam on? He's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm fine. I want to go back in there. And they're like, I don't think you should. I don't think that's a good idea. And everyone's kind of like, this is awkward. Like, yeah, why is he so trigger happy right now? And then he leaves everyone's side and heads back to where the action is. It is the most disturbing body cam image I have ever seen. Brian was taken into custody. Obviously, he does get sentenced. He's convicted of a crime. He is held accountable. The police chief, Aaron Olson, they do hold a press conference, but they decline to take any questions about what happened that day. Even the lawsuit that arises from the hostage, the other hostages that were freed, because they just haven't seen the evidence, which makes no sense. You were there. They say that their officers are held accountable, but not one officer was without pay. None of them were suspended. No one was transferred. It's like they just didn't. If no one's going to say anything, we can just move on. Is there
anything got put on leave?
Nothing.
Not even paid leave.
No, he said our officers should be trusted, even no matter what is said here or 5 years ago, referring to the drug raid.
Wow.
Which that quote tells me they knew that they were doing something wrong in that drug raid as well. Because they didn't find anything except for that weird little bag of weed.
Yeah, that's it.
So Olson, he continues to say that unfortunately it is unfortunate what happened. They do get they try to get past the tragedy of Funk's death. The department is heading in a new direction, and we treat people with dignity and respect, no matter what they're affiliated with. What does that mean? Because the Eagle Nation Cycle Club, it is a motorcycle club, but they're not affiliated with a gang. They're not hustling drugs.
What affiliation are you referring to? Exactly.
Exactly. So as of 2021, the lawsuit in the wrongful death of Michael Funk and the drug raid from 2012 has completely been dismissed. So the federal appellate court said that it wasn't worth proceeding with. Either there wasn't enough evidence, there was enough information. For whatever reason, the entire case has been dismissed, unfortunately.
That's it. We're dismissing it. No reason.
That's all we know. All Steve Arado, the owner, has asked for was a transparent investigation and apology to the citizens of Neenah for lying about Michael to drop his weapon. Because the police are now saying that they demanded for Michael to drop his weapon, but his hands were raised above his head. When he exited the building, there was no weapon.
Right.
So he's saying he wants an apology. And further, the hostages are filing a complaint with the police commission alleging Hoffer, the person who originally wrote the warrant for the drug raid in 2012, Ross and other Neenah officers violated department policy. The complaint accuses Craig Hoffer, the shooter, of insubordination because he disobeyed his sergeant's orders to stand down after he suffered a head injury during the gunfight with Flatoff and then re-entered the scene and with Ross shot Funk. So So that is their official complaint that they are moving forward because their case got dismissed. When I spoke to Mike, I told him, I was like, what were you aware about this drug raid and how the stigma has been attached to Eagle Nation? And he goes, well, I live 8 minutes away from there. And yeah, I kind of heard of something, but it's no one like talks about it. We don't have a major drug problem here. He's like, that makes no sense to me. That has nothing to do with Michael Funk whatsoever. Another argument that Mike and I spoke about is when pulling up some of this information, articles, YouTube videos of the actual surveillance of what happened. You can tell it hasn't, I'm no editing video expert, but with the timestamp, it doesn't look like anything's been edited or chopped or, you know.
It hasn't been altered.
These videos, that have been posted for at least 6 years or so, there's only like 400 views. And why is it that a senior citizen was murdered by a police officer laying in an alley for a half hour with no medical attention? If that happened anywhere else in the world, or even think if he was a person of color, people would be upset. And unfortunately, no one is upset in Neenah. And the police still have their jobs. Everything is moving forward and no one is saying anything. And we are just kind of flabbergasted about the entire situation. So I don't know if you want to listen to the interview that I did. We talked for about a half hour discussing how maybe race
plays a point. I was definitely going to ask a couple of questions regarding that. Do we know how long the Eagle Nation Motorcycle Club has been established?
At least 10 years, but unfortunately, it is permanently closed because the mayor didn't want to go through the courts and pull eminent domain, but they want the Eagle Nation area. Right now it's being used for storage for the business next door, but for the rest of the town, they need like parking garages and places for people to go because I guess the town is growing.
Sure.
And Steve Arado basically was like, I don't want to deal with the city anymore. You can have it. And he even helped people move into his place. He was like, I'm done. Good riddance. My hands are wiped clean of this. And the mayor basically says it's a win-win situation. It's unfortunate that they had to close, but it's nice that we didn't have to go through the courts to find another way, which sounds like they just wanted this place shut down for their expansion of the city.
Yeah. Did the motorcycle club have any kind of, like, the membership? Did they require the members to be of a certain percentage ethnicity in order to join? Like, what were
the parameters? No, there was nothing.
Okay.
There was nothing like that. And as a matter of fact, I looked up like old Google reviews and what people were saying about the motorcycle club. And it has like a 4.4 out of 5 rating. The only negative rating that I found was because they couldn't work on that style motorcycle. And yeah. So that customer wasn't happy. So that was the negative review they had. Everything else was like, they were great. It's a great friendly guys, great place to hang out.
No, I'm not thinking so much that like they were unfriendly. I'm just trying to think in my mind that if most of the members were of a certain ethnicity, that would be something that you could point at and say, okay, there might have been a racial motivation. However, if like, you know, basically legal and perfectly fine for a group, a private club, to say, all right, we are a club for French people. And you can only join our club if you have at least 50% French in your blood, right? Because that's, we're all sure. about French, right? Just for example. And that's fine, right? Or a Catholic club, and you have to be Catholic to join our club, whatever it is. Uh-huh. And then, of course, if they get targeted, it would be very obvious they were being targeted because those members are of a certain color or a certain religion or whatever it may be. So if the club had that sort of stipulation that, well, you're joining because you are of, you know, Eagle Nation or you're of this kind of background, then I would see how you could definitely make a case that this is racially motivated. It would be a stronger case. I'm not saying it's not a strong case anyway. I think there's a lot there even without that. However, it's, I think, less of a, it's harder to prove if they just accepted everyone and it's a very mixed color group. Because then if it's all mixed color, it's very, I think, harder to prove that they went after you because of an ethnicity. If, let's say, 30% of your members are white, 10% of your members are, you know, like Black or Hispanic. And then, you know, do you know what I mean? If there's more of a mix, mm-hmm. you took everyone, harder to say that they went after you because of a racial motivation.
Yeah, I don't think it was racially motivated in the sense that just because there wasn't like a biker gang. It wasn't like Hell's Angels. I mean, they did have a club and they did go riding together, but they were welcoming of everybody. Mike, I kind of asked him something a little similar, but his answer was, he honestly thinks in being there and speaking and working with the community, they think that they just wanted an excuse to shut the place down so they could get the property, that parcel of land, mm-hmm. and not have to go through the courts and buy him out, because they basically just want to put up a parking garage. That was their goal, because they have these new coffee shops, they have breweries, they have, it's like an up and coming place. And I think they just wanted the fastest, quickest way to get to from point A to point B.
I mean, I don't know about fast or quick. Certainly a very messy way to get there. A lot of governments would just have offered him money and bought him out. I would be interested to know if they ever, if they had ever gone to him and just offered him anything in the first place. Most people, I shouldn't say most people, I should say most governments or organizations would go and make an offer on a property to begin with. And furthermore, I only know this because Ron and I recently met up with one of his friends who works for, I'm not going to say which state, but he works as an attorney in eminent domain. And he says, mm-hmm. you know, 98% of these cases never even make it to court. He said, we almost mm-hmm. always settle, even the ones that dig their heels in. We find the magic number that they need because we don't want to get to court. We want this settled fast, and it's almost always just an issue of offering them enough money to get them off that piece so that we can build whatever we want on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I would think, a lot less of a pain in the butt and less media and certainly less time to just cut someone a big check. And yeah, you could say that they might... Did they save money? I don't think so. If you had to hire a bunch of attorneys and fight all this circus. But I mean, yeah. Let's say you did save money. Still pretty a messy way to go. But I would be interested if anyone had ever come beforehand in any of the years prior and even just vaguely said, oh, you have a nice place. Have you ever thought of selling the land or selling the place?
Yeah. Something tells me that with some, I mean, the two big things, the drug raid and the hostage situation, I mean, that's only two that we really know about. But something tells me that things were happening to either Steve or his business that made him want to dig in his heels even harder to say, no, you're going to do this to me. It makes me want to stay here more. Like,
yeah, sure.
I don't know if that was, I've never spoken to Steve, but that's how I would feel a little bit. Like, oh, you want this, but you can't have it even more now.
Okay. Side note, and I don't think so because you didn't mention it, but just because it sort of sounds like this and I can be dumb, Eagle Nation is just their name. They're not Native American in any way. It's just the name of the motorcycle club.
It's just the name. I thought that too. Like if it was
it just sounds
Native American.
Indigenous. Yeah. Like Eagle Nation, Eagle Rock. Like it just sounds kind of like that sort of earthy, but I understand. Okay. That's just the name of the motorcycle club. I thought maybe for a minute that would be like why they got targeted. But as the story went along,
I thought so too.
It didn't sound like that was part of it.
No. Maybe personally, Steve Barato is Indigenous American or is affiliated with that in some way, but that aspect didn't come into play in these situations.
The story. Yeah.
Right.
And we don't have any other stories or background information that there were any personal, I don't want to call them altercations, but any other personal beef between any members or Steve, like between them and the cops, like off. Off record, anybody sleeping with each other's wives, messing with each other's, like, do you know what I mean? Like anything off campus happening.
Yeah, that's actually a really good question.
Small towns, sometimes things start getting heated in a way that wouldn't be if there wasn't stuff, you know, off stage happening.
No, that is a really good point. The one thing I did find, which I didn't put into this story because I just didn't have enough facts, were there was a stabbing and the articles and information didn't say they started at Eagle Nation or ended up at Eagle Nation, but it happened outside the building. A man got stabbed, walked into to escape into the building and was basically left there. Like no one called anyone.
Wow. Again, with not calling any EMT, right? Any ambulance.
Exactly. Anyone. They just kind of let him stay there hurt. And I don't know if it's because they don't trust the police to actually help them or they didn't want to be affiliated with another scandal. But unfortunately,
or something went down that you knew you were part of something that shouldn't have been happening. That's usually why you don't call the cops.
So, it just tells me just more shit that went down at Eagle Nation.
I mean, yeah, there's always going to be parts to the story that we're not going to hear about or know about that don't make it in. But it just sounds to me like from the beginning with the way that they went in and, you know, allegedly planted the drugs, like from the very beginning, it sounds like there's a vendetta. However,
it
doesn't sound like there's a racial motivation. So I'm trying to see where the vendetta is. And in a town like this, to think that the police department would go after them like this hard to grab a property. If the town has that much money to pay off the cops, then they have enough money to just buy the property. So if it went down like this, it's because there was petty shit happening. There was some drama.
There's a lot of petty shit happening.
Like there was some personal butthurt going on. You know what I mean? Like somebody was doing something to somebody else that they were not happy about. It just sounds like that kind of thing. The way that cop was like so trigger happy to get back in there. There's just like a lot of moving pieces that just look to me like you wanted to hurt people because maybe you were pissed. I mean,
yeah. What happened to you? And why in the 2012 drug raid, why is the same person there twice? Why are they raiding the place twice?
Yeah, a lot of things that it just sounded like, oh, well, we didn't get them this time. Let's just go back again. I want to go back in there. Let me do it. So it just it seems that things happened very personally to me.
I think. It does sound very personal.
So maybe I've watched too much Sons of Anarchy. I don't know. But I will tell you this. I know of a person, I heard of a person that he got into a fight with his neighbor. His neighbor was an officer of the law. And now there was no reason, I should say that I didn't see any reason. Maybe this guy felt some other kind of way, but from what it looked like to me, he got into this other man's business for no reason. And I just thought that that was dumb, but he saw that the police officer was cheating on the wife, or maybe the wife was cheating on him. And he was like, basically like spying on their house and like basically blew that news up in their neighborhood. It became this whole thing. I promise you, that man will never stop looking over his shoulder. It doesn't matter where you go. Doesn't matter what happens with that case legally. Like, doesn't matter. You pay a fine. You didn't go to jail. That cop, his buddies in the next town, in the next state, for the rest of your life, you are going to be getting the most traffic tickets of anyone you ever know. I promise you. Like, you do not want to mess around and piss off cops for no reason, because that's the shit that happens. Double raids, planting of drugs. Like, you pissed somebody off. Something else happened there. And I'm not saying that you were wrong in how you pissed them off. Maybe you had a good reason to piss them off. I'm not saying you're like that nosy neighbor. Maybe those cops were trying to shake them down for like money. Like, you know what? If you guys want security and you want to keep this land, you better pay us back something. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it could have been a good reason to push back, but there was definitely something else going on in that story, because everything seemed like it happened at a level that was very personal.
And it's so intense for, I mean, the entire situations could have been handled so differently. Like, the video surveillance from inside Eagle Nation, it shows people, I'm talking about what happened in 2012, like, there was no one there. It was like a couple guys working. One guy was at a desk. It was empty. It was clean. Like, it just looked like an average work day. And people are storming in through the back and front door.
Yeah.
Like, super intense. I mean, there's such a different way that it could have been handled. I bet they could have just knocked on the door and been like, "Hey, do you have any weed in here?" And Steve would have been like, "Come on in."
Even if you go in, let's say, with a warrant, and you're going in, let's say, a little aggressively, like, "Hey, we're coming in, open the door." But like, to storm in to a quiet business that way, you wanted to scare them. You wanted to make the entrance. And then you dig in your knee into their back. It's just the whole thing.
They wanted to find something, is what happened. Well,
and they wanted to scare them. They wanted to impress upon them that I'm in charge and I'm going to make your life hell right now. And that's a personal thing.
It is.
That is a personal anger for whatever reason. And I don't see it being a reason of color. I don't see it being a reason of religion. So my mind goes to, well, then it's a reason that you guys were fighting about something else, whatever it was.
Someone knows something. And it has to be something more than the city just wanting the property and pressuring them out.
Yes, yes. It definitely seems more emotional. They were in their manly emotions. Definitely. Mm-hmm. They think we're dramatic. Shit.
Please.
We would have sat down for coffee at a shop and been like, "Let's just work this out." All right.
If anything, that cop that was kneeling on his back probably could use some weed. Jeez.
Right? Holy cow. Take it easy.
You need this more than I do, buddy.
2012. I mean, it was already, was it becoming legal in some places? I don't know. It should have been already legal in some places. Give me a break. An eighth of weed? What is that? Can you even make a joint out of an eighth of weed? I don't know. I don't know anything about weed. Allegedly.
It's enough to make a joint, but I think.
Allegedly,
just
right?
A couple hours north in Michigan, it was completely legal. And Chicago, of course, it was legal. I'm assuming, but I just think that's so stupid.
It just seems like such a tiny thing and this huge overreaction. You didn't bust in there and find like bricks of cocaine. You didn't go in there and find like bags of pills. And right? Like, what tip did you get that led you to that force? What judge signed that warrant? How about that? I want to know who signed that warrant that allowed you to bust into that business at that level of violence.
Yeah. And then to go and do that and waste everyone's time and money doing something twice. Like that and coming up with nothing.
Twice. And I got to tell you, I mean, I don't know how it is out there in Wisconsin, but here you have to have such a high burden of proof to get a warrant to break in like that without knocking on the door, without being polite, without showing the warrant, without like to throw people down on the ground and just rip a place apart like that with that kind of aggression. That and the judge did that to them twice. I want to know, what proof did you come to them with that showed that you had the authority? Like, what proof did you have that they were moving all these drugs or that they were this gang? You know what I mean? Like, did you have pictures of them running drugs? Like, what was the evidence? And then some judge signed off on it. That sounds dirty to me. That sounds like some
is dirty.
Yeah, some stinky, dirty business. That was some petty vendetta, I'm telling you.
It is. So the interview with Mike will be posted after this episode. And we discuss kind of like the aftermath, what he experienced, because he moved to Neenah, Wisconsin from Chicago to get away from the police activity just because it was happening a little too often. So he moved, he's closer to family. And then like the same weekend or the same week, he hears about this hostage situation, and he works with a lot of people who were in the community and felt a certain way and don't really understand the police's motivation with things and how they get away with murdering a senior citizen. I mean, there's no way the police thought that was the shooter.
No.
I'm just saying.
That poor guy.
It is. So
I'm very excited about that interview. Wait, did I miss this? How do you know Mike?
Okay, so Mike has a podcast and it's called The Stoverload Nation and it's all music. He is from Chicago. I'm from Chicago and he's on actually a Facebook group where you can like promote podcasts and stuff. And so it was a whole thing where it's like, do you want to be a guest or have a guest? And so of course, till death do us part, I was like, does anyone have a hometown? Yes. And Mike was like, get a load of this shit.
Yes. Thank you. I love that. So, That's my thing now. When I talk to people is they'll tell me, you know, we'll be talking. We'll for some reason get into the subject of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, I would love to go on a podcast. And I'll be like, well, do you know anything about crime? Has a crime ever happened to you? Do you know anybody who's been murdered? No? Okay. Never mind. You can't come on the show. Sorry.
Moving on.
Sorry.
Next.
Bye. I was talking to someone and he's telling me, he's like, well, I know the guys from the Sugar Hill Gang. Then, and I'm like, do they know anything about like any murders or crime? And he's like, well, but they're the Sugar Hill Gang. And I'm like, yeah, but I only do true crime. The look on his face. I don't think anybody's ever like told him that he's not like the hottest shit.
The coolest ever.
It's okay. It's okay. He also represents R. Kelly, so I'll take him up on that one.
I love it.
He pulled up the roster, though, and I'm like, no, honey. I only want to talk to you about the ones that have committed crimes. If they didn't commit a crime, I'm not interested.
People don't understand. I don't care about football or whoever's close by.
No, I don't care about the next record deal. I don't care about any of that. I care about if they've done something bad or they know someone who did something bad. I'm like, but you know what? Maybe start asking around. Maybe start asking your clients. You'd be surprised. People will come out.
Oh my God. I have the funniest story. So I got the basketball card. And I have it like propped up on my bookshelf in the office. And I just leave it there. I completely ignore it. But it is the basketball card with the Menendez brothers in the background. And I love just having this thing. I cannot tell you how many people are like, I didn't know you liked basketball. And I'm like, no, I don't care about the guy doing an air jump. I care about these two sitting in the background.
Yeah, duh. I don't care about basketball. I love it.
I bought it for the murdering twin brothers or whatever they were.
That's so funny. That's too much. It's too much. I've got to see that card.
No. I'll send you a picture. It's not an original one. It's like the second print or something. But I don't care because I don't care about basketball cards. I cared about the story behind it.
Right? That's like if, I'm trying to think of another equivalent. I can't think of one. Okay, so I would never do this because I think it's wrong. But like if you owned one of those pieces of artwork by like Ed Gein or something, and someone's like, oh, I didn't know you collect art. And you're like, no, I don't collect art. I only have that piece because it was painted by a serial killer. That would be, but I would never give them money. I think that's too dark for me. However, that's like that same vein of, I would do that. I would buy something that's completely like not even, I think it's ugly or something because it's related to true crime. That would be me. 100%. Oh,
good times.
Good times. Anything else on the story that you wanna throw in there?
No, I mean, just to tie it up with a bow, unfortunately Eagle Nation is now closed. Michael Funk's wife, Teresa, does still want an apology from the police force, and the police force have not given it. They won't speak about it. And unfortunately, their case was dismissed, and they are filing an official complaint with, I'm not sure if it's the city or the state or how high they can go. I hope they can take it all the way up to get some justice. I don't even think they're looking. I think the fact that they weren't apologized to makes them more angry. So,
and I think that happens with a lot of victims or victims' friends and family. They just want to know that there's an accountability, that someone's saying, yes, well, we fucked it up and we're going to do better. It's not even, you know what? Don't even use the words, I'm sorry. If you're too prideful to say, I'm sorry, fine. Just tell me you're not going to do it to somebody else. Just tell me that you know you did wrong and that you're not going to fuck it up moving forward, that you're going to change the system. You're going to do some kind of training or some, like, somebody's at least going to wag their finger at these cops on the inside. And this isn't going to happen again. Like, there's just, there's this feeling of, like, nothing's going to change. Like, this was for nothing. So that it's not even the apology. It's just you want to know that it wasn't for nothing.
Yeah, he didn't die in vain.
Exactly.
So, but that is everything. And then after, we'll post the interview. And I have to actually rewrap a present because I opened a present I wasn't supposed to open. So I'm going to go do that.
Bad stuff. Okay. But before you run, I got two things. Because one day when she's much older, I hope my daughter's going to listen to this. So I'm going to wish her a happy 12th birthday. My little sassy pants, Morgan. Congratulations. Pushed her out 12 years ago. I'm celebrating that too. Damn, that was hard. And also, we are going to give snaps. I don't know if we've done this on another episode, but I don't remember. Even if we did, he deserves some more snaps to our editor, Justin. Let's give him snaps. Yes. Let's give snaps to
snaps
Justin.
For Justin. Thank Justin!
Thank you, sir.
We love you, Justin.
Thank you for your work, sir. And then I'll let you go wrap your presents. Stop opening things that aren't yours, Stephanie.
I know. I'm an asshole. But anyways, hashtag worth it. I'll tell you why later.
It's all right. Love you anyway. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Honestly, I've had the worst knee pain, especially at night. And so when I use the CBD topical lotions, I feel so much better and I can sleep comfortably at night. And I love it because to me, it's a little bit safer than using other pain relief medications. Nirvana CBD doesn't have any THC. This stuff is made of 100% hemp and amazing for a bunch of uses. Whether you take gummies, use topical lotions like I do, soft gels, or even tinctures. Their website is super informative in assisting shoppers on what will help with your needs, educating on which is best for what, like sleep, pain, or even recovery. The website has great resources so shoppers feel comfortable and safe buying their items online. Nirvana CBD is made in the U.S., third-party lab tested, safe for you, and they even have items for pet care as well. How amazing is that, right, Goggles? Goggles is also amazed. So head to nirvanacbd.com and get free shipping on orders over $50. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Cool.
How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. I have been doing a ton of research on the Eagles Nation situation, and it looks like there's been more than just this one instance of the hostage situation. It looks like there was also a stabbing, and in 2012 there was also a huge drug raid on the place. And now I literally googled, I was like, all right, let me see if I can just see pictures of the inside of the shop. And because the camera is super blurry. And so I was looking, it's closed. It's like permanently closed.
Really? That I didn't know.
Yeah, I just found that out today. So I was going to ask you if you heard any. Is there anything else going on in this one place? It just seems like it's been plagued by just terrible things ever since it's been around.
As far as the situation that you referred to before it being closed, I knew the drug raid was one of the things that were, it was one of the excuses police were used to try to get them to sell the property. It was a harassment thing. It was never legit because it went to court and the whole thing got thrown out.
Yes, I did see that. It dropped.
So, yeah, they tried everything. They tried everything to get that club to sell the property. Everything. And nothing would stick.
So why did the mayor, I think it was the mayor, or why did they want them to get rid of that property so badly?
They were, to my understanding, it was a new mayor at the town at the time that took over, and he wanted that property because he was building a parking garage for the downtown district.
Okay.
And
so they just wanted them out.
Yeah, he couldn't expand it because of the properties that were there. Everybody else, I guess, came to an agreement or was happy with what they were offering except them. And I don't blame them because they had a really good reputation with the town for many, many years with the prior mayor.
It's just so crazy to me. Everything about... I went and I rewatched the YouTube video because I... And we'll get into the YouTube video. Because I have feelings about the police. They're so-called SWAT team, I guess. But it seems like there's something more going on.
like, how do police get away with this? How does the mayor get away with this? Why are they attacking this place? It seems like there's something more than what we know about. I don't know. That's my opinion.
It feels that way. It does feel that way. And I think a lot of people feel that way, too.
Okay.
They were targeted, is what it seems like. And I think all of it overall comes back down to money and property.
Money and property. It always comes down to economics, doesn't it?
Usually.
So in the YouTube video, which I will post along with this episode, because when you're watching it, I was yelling at the cops because I was like, why are you doing this? It seems like they either were doing nothing or they were doing way too much. And the part that I'm referring to is in the beginning when they have an active shooter situation.
Yeah.
And there's police like sitting in their car or sitting outside by a picnic table. And they're just like, how about you go in? I'll stay here. Or you do this. I'll stay here. And just like, there's people's lives are important. And it seemed like no one was doing anything.
There's a lot of procrastination going on there.
Yeah.
They're obviously not trained for a situation like that.
But then, like, get someone who is trained. I don't know.
I know.
It's so frustrating. I know hindsight is 20/20. But the other really frustrating part of the video is when, I don't know the officer's last name, but his first name is Craig, and he got shot in the helmet, and so it didn't penetrate, but he had the officer or his chief or someone told them to stand down, meaning, like, you need to go away, like, leave the situation.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And he was also the guy that killed an innocent person.
And he wasn't the only one.
If you watch
that video when they opened fire on the hostage, that wasn't just one cop firing on him.
I saw at least two.
Yeah, and the sad thing was the video you have, that's the only one available. When this actually occurred and happened back in 2015, 2016, there was another version where it's a lot more closer. And you got a much clearer picture of the whole thing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was a couple.
I can't believe no one's commented on the video because the guy, Craig, he is bragging and laughing. He's like, yeah, I shot a guy. And the other officer was like, did you have your camera on? Like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Like, I feel like that was the correct response.
Right.
And Craig was like laughing. Like, how inappropriate is that?
I know. It's this is by no means with this topic and us catching up. This is by no means of trying to open a wound or trying to make people relive this. But we've seen our fair share on the news of a lot of needless killings by the police. But this one happened long before those, you know, and there's blatant proof of it. Negligence, procrastination, disrespect. Unprofessionalism. I mean, there's people's lives on the line inside of there.
It's a very serious situation, and there's cops not taking it serious.
And they wonder why a lot of people don't take them seriously. A lot of people are taking matters into their own hands now because of situations like that. And I feel bad for law enforcement because there's a lot of good law enforcement personnel out there, a lot of them. You know, that's, so when you see stuff like this, you know, they kind of, they say it's one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. I kind of say if you know it's a bad apple, get rid of it before it spoils the whole bunch.
That's very true. There was another situation that happened at the Eagle Club, Eagle Nation, and it was in, I don't have the date in front of me, but a young man was stabbed. And no one did anything, meaning a lot of people watched it happen. No one got in front of the situation, no one called the police, and I'm wondering if it's because of what happened in 2015.
I don't know anything about that situation, so I really can't give a perspective on it, so I don't know anything about it. I remember hearing something about it, but I don't know anything more than that. I probably know about as much as you.
Okay, so what I know, and this is from, and the, it was on April 17th, there was a fatal stabbing, and it caused the mayor, Dean Coffert, to explore even more ways to shut down the motorcycle shop. But the unfortunate thing when it happened is when the man was being stabbed, he was just like a 22-year-old kid. Apparently, no one called the police. And I think it's just one of the reasons why they don't trust the police there.
Yeah, I can't say I don't blame them. I mean, you know, you get a good peek at some bad apples. You know, yeah. You're not exactly all that eager to trust them. You know, and like I said, it's unfortunate. There's a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate. It gives the good ones a bad rap, too. But Coffert also said that people from the building actually watched, observed, and did nothing as the young man was killed. That's what they told the newspaper. It's tragic. There's just so many things that, horrible things that have happened to that place. So,
yeah.
Should it have been closed down? or is it just, I don't know. What do you think?
That town always, I mean, you got to remember, I've only been up here since the end of 2015. And I moved up here exactly the week before that happened with the shooting at the motorcycle club. So coming from Chicago and coming to here, imagine what that's like for me. You know, it's like I left the city to get away from that. I'm not even here a week and here we go.
Yeah.
But, that town is not any different from anywhere else, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not like a major city or anything like that. True. It's not like Milwaukee or Green Bay or New York or Chicago. It's not like that at all, but it's not exactly country either.
Yeah. To me, it seems like a small Chicago area. And so anytime anything happening in Wisconsin, I always feel like it's so far away, but it's really not. It's not far away at all.
No, and honestly, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, outside of that situation and me being up here since I have been, you know, and everything that's transpired from 2015 till now, I think I've seen and heard a lot more of killings and deaths and a lot of bad situations since I left Chicago more than I did when I was in Chicago.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago, I mean, it's such a fast-paced city, so you kind of speed of it. So when things happen, you're just constantly on the go because that's just kind of the way the city flows, you know. True. But up here, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more laid back. So things are a little bit more obvious, a little bit more evident to you.
Mm-hmm. When you moved up there and you heard about the shooting, I remember when I was first talking to you. Do you mind telling your story a little bit? Because didn't you like see the cop cars or you heard the shots or?
I was only about 8 minutes away from there. I didn't, well, there's always cop cars going up and down the main street over there. That's a common thing. It's no different than Green Bay. I live on a busy street, and I can guarantee you, if you're ever on the phone with me, a cop car, an ambulance, or a fire truck's going to be driving by with a siren on.
Yeah.
Give it time. But I was only 8 minutes away from there, and like I said, there were cop cars driving all around, and you know, me and my mom were home, and my mom told me what she read on Facebook out of the Nina group. That's what it was called, like local reports and things like that, and heard about it. And I didn't know all the details all that much until I started working at the local Subway up there. And that's when I started meeting people, and I really started finding out the story. And I went to the location because when I found out enough and heard about what happened, I mean, there was a couple there that were customers, a senior couple, and they were just by far the sweetest people ever. And they were heartbroken. His wife was crying and just massively devastated. And because she was very close with them and that man for many, 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 many years. So when they told me everything, they said there's going to be a live radio hosting there, and they invited the mayor and this chief of police, I think that's what they're called, the highest level up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They were invited to come be a part of that radio show and answer questions. They never showed up.
How do you think the narrative that's out there, like on the local newspaper, Facebook, YouTube, how do you think the narrative is different compared to what actually you're experiencing living there? Well, because what I read, because I'll let you know, maybe I'll tell you a little bit what I understand. From what it sounds like from just the articles that I have been pulling up, it seems like there's a lot of local support, but the police officers, there's a new chief, and they feel like their teams did not commit a crime. They shouldn't be taken into custody, and they don't want to comment on anything because either they weren't a part of it because there's a new chief, or they just want to focus on moving the police department forward.
Well, I'm so glad that they feel the need that it's time for them to move forward. But my question to them then is, what about all those people that were in there that were also hostages? What about all the other people there that were affected by this? More importantly, what about the family of Michael Funk that got gunned down in the alley by your team? How do they move forward?
Yeah, what do they do?
Yeah, what do they do? They got to live with this. I'm so glad the guy that got grazed in the helmet's doing okay, and he's doing just fine, and he's moving forward. Good for him. But what about the guy that got killed and shot 9 times in the alley by your guys that wasn't the hostage taker? He was the victim. He was the hostage that got away, and you killed him, and you charged him, and you charged the hostage taker with his death. Now, I can understand I can understand it a little bit. It's kind of like if you're drunk driving and you hit somebody or head on or something like that, and you kill someone in an accident, you're charged with their murder. I can kind of understand that, but this is kind of different. This isn't drunk driving. This is holding a gun in your hand and pulling the trigger. You know whether you should or whether you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Very big difference between holding and firing a gun and driving a car.
True.
You know what I mean? So it just bothers me still to this very day that it was this guy was needlessly killed. He's a senior citizen, and you know, they got rewarded medals for it. And this guy, the hostage taker, he's charged with that man's murder. I agree he should be facing time, doing jail time, whatever the case may be, because of the situation he created. However, he was not the guy that shot him.
Right. That's true. I believe Funk's widow, Teresa, and some of the hostages from the Eagle Nation Cycles did have a $50 million lawsuit alleging that the Neenah police used excessive force, and that it was a wrongful death lawsuit. But I just found out also that the judge, dismissed it.
Right. You know why it was dismissed?
No.
It wasn't just because of that situation. That lawsuit was pending before that situation because of the raids, the false arrests, the harassment, all those things that were going on. That's what that lawsuit was about. Michael Funk was one of the people who was one of the people that was involved in suing them for it. Same guy got shot and killed in the alley. So how do you get rid of a lawsuit?
Yeah.
I don't think I need to play a chess game here. It's pretty obvious.
That's really messed up and interesting. Well, interesting, and not people, in a good way.
Well, the only reason I see it that way is because I was close to a lot of people and got a very close perspective, and I also went there for the live radio showing. I was helping flyer the area. I was giving an honorary hat and t-shirt for them for being a support. I just wanted to help because I wanted to do what was right on behalf of Michael Funk. What happened to him was wrong, and I just wanted to help.
Of course. But
God, this topic, like, I get all scatterbrained because there's so many things I want to say about it all at the same time.
Well, there's so many different things that really affect it, and it seems like a long history of the police not being transparent about situations, and the mayor wants to get rid of the property. They obviously don't want to get rid of it, but there's horrible things that have happened at that property. And so there's a lot going on in a small amount of time.
Yeah. And I'm curious if they closed because of all, everything that's happened over the years, and maybe it was just time to let it rest, or maybe because it was COVID, like they couldn't bounce back like a lot of places couldn't.
Yeah. It you doesn't, know, I, kinda wonder about that. I wonder about that too. I want to know, because I'm sure what they're going to release, like when I Google it, is not going to be legitimately the correct answer. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of opinions of what's going on.
The chances of getting the truth off the internet and YouTube and places like that is probably slim to nil.
True.
It's all controlled media.
It is controlled.
It's just like the newspaper and your local news station. If you don't believe it's not controlled, just turn on the news, go in the other room and turn on a different news station. Watch how both of them are saying the same thing at the same time. And but each one has their own little spin, their own little something special they want to add to it because they need the viewers.
Certain things sell. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that a long time ago. I was in college and one of my professors had lived in China because he was, I don't know if he taught English or what he did there, but he said he would get the news a couple of days later from America and then compare it to what he was reading in the Chinese newspapers. And right. He said that he was getting more truth out of the foreign newspapers than what was actually going on in America. And I was like, that's how you know it's corrupt.
Right. And to kind of backtrack to what you were saying a little bit earlier, how a lot of the people were giving off the police department that it was no comment. If anybody gave a comment, there's a chance someone might slip up and say the wrong thing and incriminate them and the department. So no comment is a polite way of saying I'm guilty, but I'm not going to admit it. Pardon the language. I don't know if I can cuss on here, but it's kind of the bitch
that's
way
fine.
Out.
I think it's such a it is bullshit. And I'm still upset when I saw the police officer laughing that he shot a dude and then they left him unattended for half an hour laying on the ground while he's like, no, I want to go back. I want to do more. It's like, no, you just got shot in the helmet. You shot someone else. And now you're laughing about it. And now you want to go do more damage. Like,
right.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it surprises me too, because with things like this surface, and it's involved around something very major in the mainstream, things like this get used against them very quickly. Very quick. But because this wasn't in the mainstream, this thing surfaces and no one's really bad eye or doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it bothers me.
Yeah, I don't understand why stories like this don't get more shares or more. The video on YouTube has been on for years and has less than 1,000 views. But if this happened, say, in Chicago, and it was a person of color, people would be all up in arms about it.
Yeah, riots, everything. And we talked about that, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I hope this serves as a eye-opener, that before we had the George Floyd situation, then I forgot what the other guy's name was. There was two in a row, though, that it happened to.
Right.
The guy that got shot in the back. He didn't get killed, but he got paralyzed. I can't remember his name.
I do remember.
Yeah, him. And, you know, and both situations were completely messed up and unnecessary. Both of them. Regardless, no one needed to die or get killed or paralyzed. Nothing.
Right.
And
it was unnecessary.
No one was using enough judgment there. You know what? You know, it always stems around a racial factor. And it bothers me because if you go back to 2015, what happened to Michael Funk, he was white. He got shot, killed, gunned down 9 times in the alley. You know what I mean? It's like, you guys aren't the only ones this happens to. the media likes to spin it. They like to keep people fighting amongst themselves. They like to keep that division there. Because if we all get along, we all work together, obviously there's power in unity.
Power in unity, yeah. I do believe, and this is, it's terrible what happened to Michael Funk. But if Michael Funk was an Indigenous American or an African American, some of the lawsuits wouldn't be dismissed. There would be a lot more press about. I think the police would do a lot more, other than just saying, "Oh, we're moving forward. We're going to do better next time." Well, you haven't been doing anything, and so. Yeah. It's unfortunate that this happened to anyone. It's unfortunate that I just feel like there should be more spotlight on stories like these, because it's not things that just happen in Minneapolis or Chicago or Picket City, Fayetteville, right. North Carolina. So that's my point of view. I may lose friends on that, but I think,
you know, I'm someone, like I said, I grew up and spent most of my life in Chicago, and I love everybody equally. I don't mm-hmm. see color. I see people. I see sure. human beings. I always have. I always will. You're not gonna change my view on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I do think the media and things of that nature, they prey on topics like that for a lot of different reasons. And it's really messed up when it starts becoming... when it starts becoming like a game show or like entertainment, and how it's yeah. used to excel their career or something like that, I think that's when it starts. The line starts needs to be drawn, because I don't like seeing people lose their life just for someone else's game.
Exactly, game show. That's a really good description, because that's what it is. People just want a story to be popular.
Yeah,
and
you can't believe the news. I mean, it's. You can't believe the news at all. Anything you watch on the news is all controlled media. I mean, it's mm-hmm. look at the elections, for example. We're not going to go into politics, but this is a great example of it, okay?
Sure.
Who do you think pays them to run the story? The people that are running.
Right.
What are they paying them to play? Anything that'll slander their competition.
Uh-huh.
Think about it. So, again, controlled media. Whoever has the money to pay for it, that's what they're going to spend.
That is very true. And also, owns most of the news sites, like CNN, ABC.
The government.
It's like one company.
Yeah, it's a nice big network hub.
Yeah, I mean, National Amusements, I think it's over... They have 80% control over major companies like Viacom, Paramount. Stream media ownership is insane. So whatever they vote on or what they think is interesting is what we're going to hear about.
Right. Right. And no matter how you try to control it, there's always going to be another avenue. There's always going to be something else that's going to come out that mm-hmm. people are going to go to and utilize to voice their opinion. Facebook has all these privacy settings and all these content controlling things, and that's fine, but where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? If you stop running or you go down, guess what? Someone's going to make something else, and it's going to get used there. And when it gets out of hand there, that's going to happen there. It's going to be a repeat cycle over and over and over again until people can start speaking up to the people they want to speak to directly, face to face, and quit relying on social media being a keyboard warrior. That's when true change can happen.
Yeah, I think all of our media, it's everything that we hear, Instagram, TikTok, wherever people get their information, it's all owned by Comcast, CBS, AT&T, News Corp, Disney. I think it's like 5 or 6 companies. So those 6 companies control everything that we listen to. So what they think is interesting is what we're going to find interesting, because yeah, they control it.
Yeah, you're going to like what we tell you what to like. You're going to listen to what we tell you to listen to.
Exactly.
It sounds there's a lot probably, like population control, don't it?
Yeah, I'm sure when we post this episode, there's going to be like black Suburbans in my driveway.
Right.
They know too much. Yeah,
let's not mention the name of my show. I want to keep that intact.
Oh,
you know, but so at funny. This point in time, though, I mean, I don't think you and I are saying anything any different than what's already been said.
I don't think so either.
To be quite honest with you. And enough is enough at this point, because I am tired of every time I turn on the news of hearing about someone getting killed, someone driving through a Christmas parade. You know, I am sick of it. And it's like, what is it going to take for people to wake up and realize you're going to make a bad decision? Don't do it. The digger you deep, the more you might find out. But I only learned as much as I did because I lived in the town where it happened, and I happened to meet and became friends with quite a few people who lived very close by and that were very close with them. That's why I know what I know, outside of the fact that I was there and I saw the aftermath and what the place looked like. And I feel horrible for them. They, all those guys I met through at the time that I didn't get to know them personally one-on-one, but these weren't guys that were a threat. These guys cared about their community. They did a lot for that community before that new mayor took over at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was that new mayor that screwed up everything.
That's so sad.
You know, they had toy drives for the Toys for Tots. They did a lot of breakfasts for the fire department. You know, they kept the bad news out of there. You know, they did a lot of good. And it's like, these weren't bad people. These were actually good people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, money and economics came into play, and you put a price on them and cost them.
It's so sad. I really hate that for everyone there. I really do. I wonder if there'll be like a new place where people can like gather and like have good things, like, you know, either hang out and work on their motorcycles, do what they do,
right?
Or have those breakfasts. Do you want to plug your show?
Due to the nature of the topic we're talking about and all the companies that just got sandblasted, no. I'm going to play it safe.
that's totally fine. Do you want me to mention your name, or do you just want me to be like my friend Mike in Wisconsin?
You can put my friend Mike. That's good enough.
Okay. All right.
I put almost 3 years into this show and it's going good. I do not want that sabotage.
Okay. No worries.
If it's okay, I'd like to send a little something out there to your listeners, if that's all right.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
I always like to take a moment to try and send something special or something nice or something that unifies us all. You know, because everybody can spend, we all, every day we wake up. At some point or another throughout most of our day, we're going to hear something negative. Something tragic is going to be going on. Something unfortunate is going to be happening somewhere, somehow. And for anybody that's listening who's getting bothered by this, my challenge to you is to seek out the opportunities to make a difference. Whether if you see someone homeless that needs a bottle of water or a sandwich, or someone need help crossing the street, you know, seek out the moments where you can help. Don't get bombarded and held back and depressed or be in fear of living your life and going out and making a difference because you're afraid of what someone might think or might say. I live by a saying, it's called FTW. Blank the world. I don't need to explain what the F stands for.
Right.
But overall, if we're going to make the world a better place due to the midst of all this chaos and craziness and all this bad shit that's going on, let's seek out the moments and the situations where we can help. We don't need the government to tell us to do that. We can do that on our own.
True. I like that message. And it is really hard to look past some of those things. But, I mean, you could just, if you're going to get coffee, you could buy the person's coffee right next to you, or, you know, you don't have to be convoluted with all the negative. Things can be good.
Yeah, I mean, I even go as far as saying, if you see a local officer you've seen around dozens of times, you know it's a good guy just doing his job and he does it the right way and you respect him. If you see him sitting outside, sit in his car, offer to buy him a cup of coffee. Don't offer to buy him a donut. He might take that as a joke or some kind of fun. Don't do that. But, you know, just a little bit of thank you goes a long way.
That's nice. I like that.
you know, that profession does not get enough thank yous any more than the people in our armed service do.
I like that a lot. Thank you goes a long way. A cup of coffee, an energy drink, or if you see someone standing outside, they're just as cold as you are. So
yeah,
I like that a lot. That's a good message to send everyone, especially this time of year.
Yeah, it's the holiday season. We gotta be a little bit more giving, have a little bit more empathy, a little bit of humility. Mm-hmm. You know, the little thing to you could be the biggest thing to someone else. So don't let the season of Christmas be the only time we do it, though. Learn from it and take it forward with you into 2023 and so forth, and teach your kids what that's about. That's how we're gonna change things. That's how things are gonna get better when we start doing it on our own accord.
There's a quote that I don't know who said it, but it basically says that you may not remember what was said or what was done, but you will always remember how you felt.
That's true.
And I think that goes a long way. So on that note, this was cool. I will record with Natalia on Friday, and I'll have her take a listen, and I'm sure she's going to be just as shocked as everyone else when they learn about what happened.
Yeah, I don't think this is something that, I mean, I think Michael Funk and his family have the right to rest in peace, you know, but mm-hmm. due to the nature of it, that those are bad memories that are going to be with that family for the rest of their life, so why should that family have to live with it, but the people who killed Michael Funk don't.
Yes, so...
Yeah, they need to be reminded of what they did. You know, they shouldn't get away with it.
I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, and I had fun. I love diving deep into cases like these, and I will talk to you soon. I'll keep in touch with you on Facebook.
We'll be in touch. Thanks, Stephanie.
See ya. Bye. Everyone, I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message, tilldeathdoaspartpodcast@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, tilldeathdoaspartpodcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, definitely like, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.